Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And I'm a little bit behind on some of the books that I wanted to review.
Oh, yes.
But then I read another book. And of course, the latest book that I want to talk about, like the latest book that I've read is the one that I'm most excited to talk about.
Yes.
You know, because other books, I'm like, yeah, an Adrian Tchaikovsky fantasy novel, first in a series. Yeah, I could talk about that, but like, yeah, I've got stuff to say about it, but yeah, whatever. And a book from the by Robert Silverberg, which won the Nebula Award in the 1970s. Yeah, I could talk about that. I don't really have a huge amount to say about it. It's not like excited to talk about it.
Yes. However, that one would be interesting because it's a book from the 70s.
Yeah,
don't have that
Keep
many
trying
of
to
them.
Find good books from the 70s.
Yeah.
And then there's, a book that I reread for the SFBRP must reads list, which is our kind of masterworks, our kind of like what is the set of books which if you read all of those you'll get a really good overview of the best of science fiction.
Yes.
It's an Ian and Banks culture novel. I've read it three times before. I've done two separate episodes about it in the past. I was like, I could talk about that again, which I would like to talk about. But then I read, or put it this way, I started reading Death of the Author by Neddy Okorafor, which is a book from this year or published in this year.
Yes, very
and
new.
It's very new. I would predict it will win. I'm going to predict right now it will win the Goodreads People's Choice Award for Science Fiction next year because it fits into that mold of books which are written, which have science fiction-y kind of stuff in them, but aren't really, don't feel like science fiction. They feel more like literary fiction, so there's a crossover there.
Yeah,
you know
so
what I mean?
They target a broader audience.
Yes, and that's what I want to talk about in today's episode. Yeah, that's what I want to talk about in today's episode because there was a Station Eleven, which felt a bit like that. There was the Kalyanne Bradley's Ministry of Time, which I talked about recently, which won the Goodreads People's Choice Award for Science Fiction for last year.
Yes.
And then there's this book, and I'm like, these books are doing something very specific. And also, Death of the Author by Neddy Okorafor is doing something even more specific.
Okay.
But not even more specific. It is like self-consciously doing the thing that these other books are doing, but also talking about doing those things in the book itself.
Okay.
I will preface this review by saying I got about 40% into this book and stopped reading it because it's just written terribly. It's a terribly written book. But I'm so excited about what's inside the book that I want to talk about it because I think the book is way, way cleverer than the writing quality allows for me to enjoy.
I really hope I can ask you for some example of what you consider terrible writing.
Okay, just put it this way. The writing is written by some, it's like Neddy Okorafor has written children's books or like young adult books or whatever.
Yeah.
There's Binti. Did you read Binti? It's
yes,
a novella and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I did.
So, but imagine that, but trying to do some literary techniques and talk to all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But still with the same language and not good. And the other books that I read by her, I think there was Hoofia's Death, which I rated like 4 stars when I reviewed it, you know, five or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Very good book. But again, it's a lot about talking about children or, you know, in that case, it was some, you know, child story. Even though it wasn't young adult science fiction, it's writing about childhood. It's writing about young adulthood.
Right.
But there's a skill there. But Neddy Okorafor is writing now about adults, but isn't striking the balance of writing something which feels like a fairy tale in a way that's accessible to an adult human with an adult human brain who just needs to suspend disbelief and also read something enjoyable or interesting to get through. So anyway, let me set this up in this way that I wanted to read this book because again, it came out this year and it's on my list of books to read and you know, because I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. You know, it's a book called Death of the Author. And do you know the Death of the Author by not the Death of the Author, like the concept of the Death of the Author? Let's write that. Let's put that right here in the front.
No,
which is
that's a concept.
Yeah, it's a concept by I don't know, postmodernist French people, I'm guessing. I think it's Roland Barthes who did it. Yeah, I think that's probably it. Death of the Author, which means that when you're critiquing a book, you can't always think about, okay, what was the intention of the author? What's the history of the author? What's the politics of the author? What's the background of the author?
Oh, right. Okay, so it's not a metaphorical concept. It is a real... the writing in the book and the actual author who wrote the book.
Yes, you only critique the words in the book based on what the words are in the book.
I see.
Don't try and critique or enjoy or whatever you want to talk about, but by what's going on with the author.
Right.
So if the author is writing a point of view character, you can say, okay, is the author, I don't know, racist, or is the character in the book racist?
And the author is trying to make a point of
it. And the author is trying to make a point of it. Yeah. And you can tie yourself in knots to say, is this author really racist, or is this a racist character in the book?
Yeah.
Whereas if you just, like, again, I'm just doing it at the most basic level here, Death of the Author kind of thing. If you say, oh, Death of the Author, I'm just going to address this book and there are racist characters in the book.
Yeah.
And then you're like, but what does that say about society? What does it say about my reading? What does it say about other criticism? What does it say about, like, everything else without trying to impose, but what the author was trying to say here was this. You know, in Death of the idea of this criticism, like, based on Death of the Author, or, like, you know, removing the authorial intent into something, as, you know, take that out of the equation or try and take a step back away from that and just approach the art as it is, in this case.
Okay.
Writing.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I think in the past we had quite a few of these instances where it was clear that the author was writing in a language that was used around the time.
Yeah.
Now they're dead. And
No.
So
not dead. Yeah, not literally dead.
I understand.
It's sometimes easier if you just pick up a book and read it and you don't know anything about the history of the person, but generally there's things like, who was Homer? It's like Homer is dead, and also we only have the text. Like, we don't have any biographical information.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have what are Homer's political views and stuff. Which, and the on the opposite side of the spectrum is literally fan fiction, which is written by people who then insert themselves into Harry Potter to have sex with, you know, Malfoy or whatever it is, like that.
Okay.
I'm just saying there's the other end of the spectrum. Like, if we're talking about this, it's sort of like, and then when you read that, the intent of the author is right there. Like, they have inserted themselves into the text, so then it's very difficult when a character in a book says something they have the same name as the person in the book.
Yes.
And this is what I want to talk about in this way, which is that Callianne Bradley with the Ministry of the Future, remember I was talking about this, I was really struggling to understand what the author was going for when they didn't give their main character a name, but they also gave their main character their own biography.
Yes.
You know, in that case, it was someone I think was half... Was it half Vietnamese and half British? I can't remember exactly what it was. But then she lives in London. Oh, and the character in the book lives in London and things. And then she takes like a real life historical figure and then writes them having sex together. And I'm like, okay, it's really difficult for me to remove the author of this novel who is pretty much saying that she is this person. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like... almost too explicit how much I can't separate the author of the book from the character in the book once you know anything at all about the author of the book.
Right, yeah.
So they're inserting themselves into the book and then writing themselves a romance, love story, time travel adventure, whatever.
Yeah.
But then also they are writing about a real life historical figure who's transported through time and is then inserting their penis into the vagina of this main character who isn't named in the book. So the only name that I have to put to them is the author of the book. You know what I'm saying? It's like they are playing around with inserting themselves into the text of a novel.
Right.
And again, this is done the other book that I was saying, which won the Goodreads People's Choice Award for Best Science Fiction in that year, was by the author of Station 11, who now I can't remember the name of the author, wrote a follow-up book, which was called Something the Moon. I can't remember what it was called. Phases of the Dark Side of the Moon. Let's have a look. Moon. Let me have a look. No. Can't remember what it was. Oh, actually, I could just look at it this way. All right, I'm going to search.
Look for Station 11.
Station 11 on Basilicata, Time Station Berlin. Station 11. Okay, Emily St. John Mandel.
Right.
Also wrote Sea of Tranquility. I told you it was something about that. So, and that was about somebody who had written a book about a pandemic hitting, who then had to go on a book tour. Then during the book tour, this is a story about an author who'd written a story about a pandemic, mm-hmm. who then had to be known as, oh, you're the author who wrote a story about a pandemic, where the TV show, which was set during a pandemic, was coming out during the pandemic. Like, they couldn't film the movie, or they couldn't film the TV series or show about being in a pandemic. So this was Emily St. John Mandel putting herself into the novel so much that the worst part of that novel, which I, you know, mostly enjoyed as a silly timey-wimey adventure stuff with some of the worst science fiction elements, but, you know, generally enjoyable as, like, what, 3 stars I gave it.
Yeah.
The worst part of that was the author insert part where she wrote about going on a book tour and doing lots of signings during the start of a pandemic and then having to rush home because she'd written a book about the pandemic, so she knew what was going to happen. And so she saw this pandemic happen and was like, I've got to get back to the moon and be with my family during the pandemic, and then writing about being an author during a pandemic lockdown. Yeah. So what I'm saying is that these authors of good past and probably future Goodreads awards for best science fiction authors, for science fiction novels.
Yeah.
The authors of those are doing this very much inserting themselves into the book.
Yeah.
And then what they do is they write a book which is like a mixture between a literary novel mm-hmm. and with science fiction tropes attached. Sprinkles of science fiction tropes onto it. So Emily St. John Mandel did this as well. She put in these long sections where if you're reading like what you call litfic or literary fiction, which is much more set in the modern day with real characters and it's about their family life. It's about their relationships with people. It's about their history of the, you know, what's happening with their family 2 generations ago and now and all about this. It's like, but working in, you know, this relationship. And then in the case of Callie Ann Bradley, sort of like, oh, and my mother is from the Khmer Rouge. Oh, she escaped from the Khmer genocide or whatever it is. And then she came over and now I'm facing racism and this is the new culture that I'm in. Now I'm in London and there's climate change and I've got to live with this and I've got to go to work. And it's very like litfic literary kind of styling there, which is about, oh, right, if we're gonna write about this kind of stuff, we've really got to center it in our own experiences, in our lives, you know, in our normal human lives first, and then put some science fiction stuff around it. Yeah.
So now I want to make a comment about this from a person who has never written a book before.
Yeah.
For me, there's always 2 ways of approaching writing a book. One is you write about something that you are very familiar with.
Yeah.
Like you write about the town you live in.
Yeah.
And you set your story there, so it's believable and all this kind of stuff. And if you write a book about something that A, you experienced, or B, you're very good at, or reflects your experiences in general, that to me feels like a good way to write a book. If there's a story that's actually interesting. The second way of doing it is to completely go in the opposite directions.
Yeah.
You come up with everything.
Yeah.
You come up with the world. You come up with the characters.
I get it.
You know, this is the kind of like the 2 directions that it can go, right?
But so here's what you're trying to say there is like write is the old adage, write what you know. So if you're passionate about something, write about that, or write a character who is passionate about that, and all of your passion can come out of it. In when I was writing my own science fiction novels early on, I would lean into that when I wouldn't only do that. Like I did write a novel where one of the 2 main characters was a juggler who participated in like combat juggling, you know, the juggling fight night combat. And I wrote a novel where one of the characters was that.
Yeah.
And then the other side of that character, or the other character in that book was pretty much based around my father and all the stories that he told about not being a juggler who played combat, but was, you know, a decorated war hero who won the Military Cross and had massive post-traumatic stress disorder from being involved in Northern Ireland during the early 70s in the Troubles there, you know. So I wrote, like, you know, so that's what I'm saying. It's okay to do the write what you know.
Yeah.
But I think that that's different from literary fiction or lit fic or whatever you say, which is what you know is it's sort of like expressing truths about life and delving into life by the mundanity of it, you know.
Yes.
So
okay.
It isn't like write what you know, mm-hmm. which means, oh, I'm really excited in mountain adventures, so my character is going to be a mountain adventure.
Yep.
It's write what you know. Well, my family comes from this place, so I'm going to talk about the food from that place. And there's just going to be a long chapter talking about the food culture from Vietnam or Nigeria in the case of this mm-hmm. book. Or write what you know. It's like the mundanity of going on a book tour, and then that chapter becomes so mundane, it's just the most boring thing that I've ever read. But that's kind of the point, that it's a slog to get through a book tour because every day is the same. And you just get up, you go into another hotel.
So you write in the style to make the person feel what it felt for you.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. You're like revealing stuff about them. So anyway, this is all a 15-minute setup to get to this book. Where this book, which is Death of the Author by Neddy Okorafor, is doing what these previous books have done, which I've talked about, which is literary fiction with sprinkles of science fiction tropes into it,
mm-hmm.
like using the tropes of science fiction rather than it being science fiction,
yes.
sprinkling those things into what is otherwise a literary novel.
Yeah.
And Neddy Okorafor didn't just do that. She takes it up to the next... She takes it like four layers further.
Okay.
Where the person in the book isn't just a science fiction author who's written a novel about the pandemic and then the pandemic hits, so then it becomes a story about someone who's written. This is a someone who has written, who's got their, you know, their English PhD, not PhD, like they got a degree in English,
yeah,
and they've got their, you know, teaching credentials, and they're working as associate professor at Chicago University. And what they've done is written in the past, before this book comes out, they've written their own literary novel,
yeah.
which is about somebody who doesn't really have anything interesting going on in their life. And it's about them going to Nigeria and confronting their past and confronting their family and their identity and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then they come back to America again after going to Nigeria. And it's about, you know, it's a literary fiction novel.
Mm-hmm.
About these kind of things.
Yeah.
And it's not very good, and it won't ever be published. And she rereads it at some point in the novel and is like, well, that's not very good. What's the value in litfic? What's the value in something which is just, here's a bit of somebody's life? And by the end of it, do they move on, or do they learn anything, or do they progress as a human? I'm not sure. Like, maybe it doesn't even matter. It's like a writing exercise to how much can you bring meaning to mundane life or non-special life.
Yeah,
you know,
that can be an exercise.
And she's like, well, that's not good enough. And then she has some issues, and she gets fired from her job, and she's like, well, I'm just going to start writing. And she just writes a science fiction novel instead,
mm-hmm.
called Rusted Robots. And we get passages of Rusted Robots in Death of the Author.
Right.
It's like a. I get onto what it is in a bit if it's worth talking about. And then the book becomes someone who suddenly has a breakout smash hit with this science fiction novel,
mm-hmm.
who was previously a literary fiction author who tried something out.
Yes.
And now that's the thing that they're known for. That's their breakout novel.
Yeah. That's not their. They specialized.
They
on
don't
science
specialize
fiction.
In it, and people it are going, "Oh, I never thought you had this in you."
Like
and
a one-hit wonder.
And so then, what happened? So, what this book is about the process of an author who would normally write literary fiction, but realizes, "Ah, what I need to do is write literary fiction, sprinkle in science fiction tropes rather than it being science fiction. We're just going to say, oh, and time travel." And it's like, how does this work? It's like, well, that's not what it's about. Normally science fiction about time travel is about how does the time travel work, mm-hmm. but this isn't about that, you know, in the same way with in both Callie-Ann Bradley's and Emily Mandel, no, St. John Mandel. I always get her name switched around in my head. But in this case, the author of the book, Death of the Author, is saying, What I am doing here in this book is what Callie-Ann Bradley did and what Emily St. John Mandel did, but I'm now going to explicitly tell you by referencing like, it's not just called Death of the Author. Death of the Author is brought up in the first chapter of the book.
Yeah.
And she pretty much explicitly says what this book is. What this book is a book where an author is going to bring in their background as a literary author and bring in science fiction tropes, but I'm not really a science fiction author. Again, in the case of this, you know.
Yeah.
And it's explicitly stating what the project is.
Yeah.
What the project is we are expanding what science fiction can be by bringing in litfic ideas, which is, you know, all this concentrating on the mundanity of life and what it's like just to exist in the world with this. But I'm going to sprinkle in these science fiction tropes.
Yes.
In some cases, in this book, the science fiction tropes is I'm going to write something which is a bit Wall-y, it's a bit Einstein intersection, it's a bit, you know, whatever in the future. You know, Earth is left, humans leave Earth, and the only things left behind are the robots, and they have to look after the Earth and rebuild the Earth, and then the humans might come back or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. a bit, you know, you want to say Wall-y.
Yeah.
Is it Einstein intersection? Is that the one I'm thinking about?
I don't know. That what you just described sounded so much like Wall-y to me.
Samuel R. Delaney, which I'll get onto in a bit, which is... Luke talks to Juliano about a novel so intriguing he listened to the audiobook twice. Yes. So, and I'll get onto more about that in a bit. But so that's what this book is doing. But also, in the real world, she starts bringing in near science future, science fiction future. So it's, sorry, near future science fiction, which is this, like, what's happening next Tuesday? So you're talking about, like, what's happening now, but it's not really now. It's, like, almost exactly as it is now. But let's just say... artificial intelligence is slightly more progressed, or, you know, there's someone has invented just this one new thing.
Okay.
And that's what, like, near future science fiction is. It's very now based.
Yes.
And this is actually a really good example of that, because she's talking about, oh, and how many followers do I have on TikTok, and how many followers do I have on Instagram? Like, this feels it's like it was written in, like, 2024,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And what is happening here? And they're talking about self-driving cars are a new thing. Like, oh, yeah, the SUV turns up and nobody's driving it. And the mother's like, oh, I don't really trust it. But she's like, oh, no, I can travel around now because I can't drive myself, but now I'm not relying on the... And so you get this kind of mundane descriptions of what it's like to be mildly famous on Instagram and waking up and seeing all the liking notifications, and what it's like to have, like, an AI app which isn't very good, but it's, like, kind of working, and things like, you know, and talking, you know. So it's very now based in terms of near future science fiction is often very optimistic.
Yeah, but also realistic.
Yes, it's realistic and optimistic in that it's sort of like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if this one new technology was slightly better and it could change the world in this way? And parts of it are sort of like, oh, but there's somebody not who doesn't want that. There's a bit of conspiracy. There's a bit of espionage or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's much more like, hey, just imagine if this one thing was different and how cool that would be.
Yeah.
There's a lot of near future science fiction.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, and then the robots invade and everyone's taken over and now it's post-apocalyptic, or it's apocalyptic. That isn't near science, near future science fiction doesn't really cross over into that. You know, it's much more about, oh, what about climate, and what about business, and what about technology, and what about tech, or whatever, you know.
So it changes, let's say, one aspect of our current life.
Yeah.
And then experimenting with that thought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How we just, would be impacted.
Yeah, or it just introduces one more thing. Yeah, yeah. Like, hey, what if this... And then it's always just about, like, and what if this robot passed, or this AI passed the Turing test?
Yeah.
You know? And we find out from the real world that when a robot passes the Turing test, you're like, well, that's not very interesting, because now AIs can pass the Turing test, like, super easily. And it turns out having a human mistakeable conversation isn't actually that important, and all we do is we get 1 minute into a YouTube video and go, oh, this is written by AI. But it takes us 1 minute for it to not pass the Turing test, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, especially if it's narrated by somebody where you think it's a real person.
Yeah, it's a real person just reading an AI script, and then maybe
it takes away one step of being near enough to
and that's why I was like, hey, let's experiment by watching a 5-year-old YouTube video on the same topic, and you're like, oh, this is actually written and made by humans, and there's just personality and character there which is missing, but you don't notice that's missing from the first minute of a YouTube video which is written by AI, because when it's written by AI, it doesn't reveal, like, that those signs don't always pop up. You're just like, oh, I don't know this channel. What is this? And you're like, yeah. Oh, AI made Drek.
It's like now when you see any sort of AI generated footage or images, yeah. At first glance,
yeah.
It looks fine.
You're just until, like, oh, there's a lion. And you're like, oh, until how you many look legs like, does that have?
Why is it moving weird? Yeah, yeah. And why is it also smooth? And okay. Yeah, so it's the same kind of phenomenon.
Yeah. So what I'm trying to say here is that I'm really excited about this style, which, again, it's not new. Because if you think about Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut, that is very literary fiction, because it's about somebody based on, again, his own experience.
Himself.
His experience. He trekked across Germany, got to Dresden, was there during the firebombing of Dresden, and then had post-traumatic stress disorder and all this kind of stuff, sprinkled with science fiction tropes about being unstuck in time. And then this other character, and also in that book, is Kilgore Trout, which is Kurt Vonnegut's, like, alter ego, self-insert, I'm a science fiction author character. Yeah. So then he can write about being a science fiction author, like a pulp science fiction author in that, and write about what it's like. So again, this is not new, but it's interesting, like, this is catnip to me to be like, oh yeah, this is the literary dick swinging, or this is what I want. This is the experimentation that I want from science fiction. And I'm excited about what this is, what the possibilities of expanding science fiction. And the genre of science fiction, I watched that video about computer game genre, and it's like, why do some genres no longer exist?
Yeah.
And it's of games no longer exist, or they're no longer popular, or the big games come out, and you're like, yeah, but where are, like, all the big fighting games that come out? And they were talking about the genres which keep going are the ones which are flexible enough to keep being reinvented.
Yes.
To keep absorbing things from other games or other styles or other genres or finding new twists, and then they're completely reinvented, and you're like, but this is the same genre. It's like, but are 2D platformers really the same as 3D platformers? Like, no, actually 3D platformers are different from 2D. And what's a collectathon where you've got to collect all the hearts or collect all the moons, or is it a race to the top? Or, you know, it turns out, you actually, when you tease it apart, all these genres can be like the same thing or different things, but really they're different. Even if you keep calling something a platformer, it's like, platformers today, if it's not a puzzle platformer, it might, like, what are we even doing here?
You know? And taking this to book genres, I would definitely say, like, something like horror or crime, you know, crime thriller kind of stuff, that is malleable enough that you can take it anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the same with, like, space opera will keep being written, because having a completely expanded world which takes up many stars and being able to travel between them, in that you can tell so many different kind of stories. When you want to do a new story, which you're like, oh, what's this new genre? It's space opera. It's like, yeah, but Ancillary Justice is, yeah, it is space opera, but what it's actually writing about is identity you know, feminism and trans identity and all this other kind of stuff, which is, like, now foundational to what modern science fiction is. But you can just say, oh yeah, but that's space opera. It's like, yeah, but space opera,
it's just as a setting.
Now, space opera is the setting, but the space opera of the culture is doing something very different from the space opera of Ancillary Justice, even though both have talking spaceships and, you know, and you're like, it's the same genre. It's like, yeah, but, like, 20 years after the culture books are no longer being written, space opera is still just as vibrant, but bringing it. And that's what I'm saying now with these near future science fiction novels, which are, you know, in this case, you know, Ministry of Time from last year, and now Death of the Orphan this year. It's sort of like, what are we doing now? Like, what's the point of near future science fiction? Is near future science fiction just going to talk about, oh yeah, but what's happening in tech right now? Or what's going to happen in tech in 2 years' time?
Yeah.
And it feels like near future science fiction was dying off. Like, what's there to even write about when science fiction is... science fiction is too slow to keep up with what's the real sciences at the moment and the real technology at the moment. It's like if you write a novel about AI slightly improving, by the time you've published the novel, AI has improved more than the novel that you wrote about AI slightly improving.
I think that is the main and biggest problem with near future science fiction, is that it can be dated.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you said, the day it comes out.
You can write, you can definitely, and I've mentioned this before, when I read this book in the 90s, like in 1998, 8, I started reading this book. And it was about... I started reading a book which was about the internet and that somebody on the internet can find someone and kill them because, you know, you stalk someone through the internet. And I started reading this book, and this was a book that was written in 1994 at the start of the internet, and I was reading it in 1998, but it was filed in science fiction because it's like near futury science fiction thriller. And it was sort of like, and I sat down and I plugged in and I turned on the computer and I loaded this program and then I plugged in the thing and the dial tone went like, and you're like, oh, that's really bored. Like, you can't, that doesn't make any sense.
That's no longer science fiction.
It's no longer science fiction because it's too close. So, and again, my own novels that I wrote were like near future science fiction because I really like that. But I'm like, near future science fiction feels like it was tailing off as a genre as science fiction, sorry, as non-fictional science accelerates too fast for like novel writing to be in a form where you can write about what's going to be, what the world is going to be like in 2 years' time.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, we're approaching the time when we can't predict what life is going to be like in 2 years' time.
Yeah.
And you're like, when you're on the exponential growth thing, even like in my novel, in my near future novel, I based like some of the space stuff. I was like, right now in 1998, SpaceX is launching rockets and it's a private company, which, and I was really excited about this. Of course, how can you not be as a space nerd to be really excited about the first ever private company that's managed to launch something into orbit. It was groundbreaking news. And so there's passages in my book that I wrote in 1998, which were based on the news stories at the time for anyone paying attention, which was this startup rocket company, which was launching stuff up, you know, and I kind of detailed what the failures were in the first four things. And because someone's gone back in time or sent information back in time, they can solve the rocket launch problems of SpaceX.
Yeah.
And in that case, just goes, I'm just going to buy the company. And I was like, well, that was like this dumb thing to show the irrationality of a young person and how stupid it was to just be like, oh, I'll just buy the company. And then the owner of SpaceX later is like, oh, I'll just buy the company. I'm like, shit, if you know what I mean. Like, a book that I wrote in 1998 is like, what's it even reflecting? Like, what's it even doing? Like, how can it be in dialogue? How can it still be relevant even 5 years later when even, well, now 15 years later, SpaceX is the dominant most, you know, of all launch companies. Yeah. They have outstripped all of the nations of the world put together.
Yeah. And especially with these near future science fiction ideas, like you said, you've put something in.
Yeah.
And you were very creative creating something in your novel.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, then, if the future then progresses, then sometimes the existing timeline or what actually happens can be more crazy and it can become something that an author at the time would have never come up with.
Yeah.
Because
it's just about exponential growth. Yeah. I could do this thing about rockets in 2008. And if SpaceX doubles the number of rockets it launches every year, that's still relevant in like, in the next year they successfully launch two rockets and the next year they successfully launch four rockets. And you're like, oh, okay, that's that exponential growth. It means that my near future science fiction can still be relevant 3 or 4 years later. But once rocket launch is per year doubles up to, we're up to 200 launches this year, you're like, oh, you've reshaped what internet telecommunication and what's possible in space and that, you know, NASA is cancelling rocket programs and we're not doing this, and then it's going to be getting to Mars is going to be a commercial effort rather than NASA spending $10 billion or whatever it's going to be. You know what I mean? Like everything, like the world is reshaped by exponential growth and rocketry, but there's still that time when the near future science fiction can still be relevant. But with AI stuff, the exponential growth is already happening now too quick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's difficult to talk about AI and robots and self-driving cars. Well, again, self-driving cars is not just software, but it's difficult. So what I'm saying is, near future science fiction, what's the point of it if the science can outpace the fiction?
Yeah.
In this case, in the case of Callie-Anne Bradley and now with Death of the Author by Neddy Okorafor, that can be a backdrop to literary novel styling things. It's not about what the technology can be in the future. It's about what it's like to be in this world with technology accelerating too quickly.
And what's the impact on the characters?
Or impact on the world.
Yeah.
But at that kind of mundane level, mm-hmm. rather than at the world-changing apocalyptic level.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really interesting place to be.
Yeah.
That Callie and Bradley can talk about climate change and what it's just like to be somebody in London when it's too hot all the time.
Yeah.
And that's a... I think that's a valid place for science fiction, or this boundary of between science fiction and literary fiction, to be sci-fi and lit fic, if I just, you know, put them together. It's like there's this boundary area where you can bring in the tropes of lit fic and the tropes of science fiction, and there's an interesting cross section there, which again has been done before in Slaughterhouse-5.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see these authors very self-consciously, like, saying what I am doing now, in the case of Nnedi Okorafor, I am doing literary fiction about the mundanity of life and this kind of stuff, plus near future science fiction, mm-hmm. plus, in this case, post-apocalyptic far future robot science fiction,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to combine them into one unit. I'm going to combine them into one thing, and that itself is and I'm going to tell you in the text of the book that is what this book is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the author and the people in the author in the book, the character of the author in the book, and the author of the book, they're both kind of explicitly saying we are expanding science fiction into lit fic, and also we are finding the science fiction tropes that we can apply to lit fic to enrich them. So if it's a story about what it's like to be someone in America who becomes slightly famous, the story is going to be about how social media impacts my mental health.
Yeah.
It's going to be about I am a wheelchair user and this self-driving cars, which don't exist in Chicago at the moment because they are geofenced to like California and Arizona or whatever it is.
Yeah.
What would it be like for one of those to turn up in Chicago,
yeah,
where it's going to be more tricky because there's like rain and snow there rather than it just being beautiful weather all the year round. But what would that allow for someone to do who's previously in a wheelchair, who has to rely on their parents and family members to drive them around, and now they have independence that they can go and, you know, go down to the lakefront and go to the pier,
yeah,
and they not have to be, you know what I'm saying, there's like these ways of bringing this up. And then it started talking about you know, prosthetic legs and by the end I think going into space, although that was just my earlier reading of it. Later on I confirmed it, yes, she does go into space at the end of the novel, but it's like I don't know. There's just these science fictional things which are offsetting the mundanity of what would otherwise be litfic going on there. So.
Yes. Every time you say the word litfic, and I now need to say it,
what?
It is so weird for a German person.
Why?
Because the word fic means to
fucking
have sex.
Yeah.
And so
litfic.
It's like a
literature about
literary
ficken.
So I'm sorry, and you said it a lot of times and it always
fiction
distracts me.
Fiction.
Yes, literary fiction.
In litfic it gets a C on it. In sci-fi it doesn't, because sci-fi is fiction, but it's not sci-fi. It couldn't be sci-fic.
Sick-fic.
No, it couldn't be sick-fic because the C in science isn't a... Anyway, don't worry about it.
Anyway.
Right, so that's all the setup to say.
Yes.
I'm super excited about these books.
Okay.
Unfortunately, these books aren't well written enough or well constructed enough to actually have any impact on me at the moment.
And I need to clarify a little bit here. When you say they're not written well enough...
To be good at writing is a thing.
I understand the use of language in novels can be underpinning what it's doing. And it can give it... a sense of... language is really broad in words that exist and all this kind of stuff. And I think what happens in these books, the language is very much like the language that is being used, the everyday language.
Yeah.
And that adds to this mundanity.
Yeah. Let me just say, I don't want to say about these books. What I'm saying is that in Callie and Bradley's Ministry of the Future, the writing was fine. The characters were fine. Like, it was all fine.
Okay.
But in the end, the experiment of combining litfic, climate science fiction, what am I trying to say? The time travel-y kind of conspiracy stuff.
Yeah.
The workplace comedy and also romance, you know, yeah. all those things. I remember we looked at the blurb about the book. It's sort of like, this book is romance. This book is science fiction. This book is, I can't remember what the three things were, but mm-hmm. it's very self-consciously saying, I'm going to combine those three things. Mm-hmm. I think writing-wise, that worked. Scene by scene-wise, great. Characters, great. The mm-hmm. people in the book, all of that kind of stuff, but it fell down at the end when it tried to be too timey-wimey.
Right.
And it felt like that mix was ultimately, for me, a failure.
Yeah.
But the writing was great. Kellyanne okay. Bradley can write a good sentence. She can write a good scene. She can set a tone. She can do all of that kind of stuff. Nnedi Okorafor has got this grand idea, this really great idea, which is, this is a book about stories, and this is a book about this kind of thing, and I'm kind of wanting to kind of like self-consciously like kickstart a new genre, and this is going to be a book about what it is possible to write this, where it's about an author who has written a literary novel and didn't work, and then she wrote a science fiction novel and it did work, but that, you know, what's the boundaries between the two?
Yeah.
But sentence by sentence, it just doesn't work. Everything is just told in sort of like, and then I did this, and then she did this, and this is what happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then she went here and did this. And it's like the writing doesn't conjure up any images of mm-hmm. what's happened
right.
or what's happening. I'm just told what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the way that Kellyanne Bradley wrote about, you know, how they both smoked all the time, and I needed trigger warnings for how disgusting it was to see people smoking together and then fucking with like cigarette ash on them. I'm like, ugh. And it's so evocative because she could evoke things with the words and the sentences and
right.
what the characters notice about each other.
Okay.
And I could see these two people, what they're attracted to each other in each other. And I could see why they want to have sex with each other. And I could see why they were falling in love with each other. And I could see why they would like put themselves at risk to save the other one when there's a conspiracy theory. And when someone dies, I could see why they're upset when somebody, not, you know, whatever it's happening. In Death of the Author, Nnedi Okorafor is so bad at this, she just writes, and then I had sex with him, and then we lay together, and then I left in the next morning. And I'm like, what's the job of writing a sex scene, which is, again, I know what the job of it is, just to say, and I had sex, and obviously sex doesn't mean anything to the author, because she... to the author character in the... like, the character in the novel.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, okay, yeah, I always say this when I'm reading science fiction and two characters haven't fucked each other, I'm like, you're adults, just fuck, it's fine. Mm. But also, I want to feel something when they do that. I want to notice that it means something to them.
Yeah.
And in Death of the Author, it's sort of like, and then we had sex and this happened, and then, you know, somebody commented on my social media post, and I'm like, what's more special in your life, the sex that you had with this person or the comment on the social media? Like, and it's written so flat and so just telling me what's happened
mm-hmm.
that it didn't work. It just doesn't, as writing, it's just not good enough.
And this kind of writing style goes through the whole book, as in this wasn't just a reflection of that you're meant to see and understand that the character didn't care.
I think a better author could write somebody who is like the character. Let me just bring it up here, because I got Death of the Author. Zelu is the character in the novel.
Yeah.
And she's someone who is not very nice. She's very unsympathetic. Like, mm-hmm. I don't like her. Immediately, she is unlikable. I understand it because her family life is super toxic.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh yes, we Nigerian family here and in Chicago, wherever we live, it's really great because we all like each other and we come and cook. And I'm like, this family is like the worst family ever. I would prefer not to have a family than this family. You know, it's like, it's but it's written like there's some cleverness in this way, sort of like, what's the unreliable narrator? And I think the whole book is unreliable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's this weird, they're just an unlikable character surrounded by unlikable things with unbelievable great stuff happening to her and bad things happening to her. And I'm like, it's just really difficult to write someone who is very unlikable but is then also compelling as a character.
Hmm.
And it is possible. I'm not saying that's not possible. I love characters who are unlikable. Like, I don't like them personally, but who are fascinating enough that I understand why a novel has been written about them.
Yeah.
And in this case, that is not the case. I am like, I wish there was this character I just don't like the character. Like, I don't like the person. The person and who she is surrounded by are unpleasant people, and just spending time with her is unpleasant.
Right.
But not in a way which is fascinating, because it's written so plainly. It's like, here is an unpleasant person doing this unpleasant thing, and now they have been fired from their job while they're at their sister's wedding. And their sister is like, hey, we're at the wedding, we're going to take photos. Maybe you'd like to put makeup on. And she's like, no, I'm not going to put makeup on. And you're like, oh, that's a real pity that you as just an like, your job at the wedding, being the sister of the bride, is to look nice in the photo. Like, again, I know it's weird to say this, but that's kind of what you do sociably. That is your job as a social person,
yeah.
is to try and fit in. That's what you do.
Yeah, like, and also please the person that
please
that
the person. It's their special day. How about they want a special day?
And at the same time, when
she was just being like the worst guest at a wedding, she was being fired from her job for being the worst associate professor in the Chicago creative writing department.
Yeah,
and she was like critiquing her students' novels and writing so much that they cried in class. And then being, I just get over it, whatever. And I'm just like, oh, wow, this is the start of the novel. Like, so she's going to learn a lot. And then, you know, writing the new book is going to change her as a person. Nope, she writes this new book, which is a massive success. She gets $1 million advance and, you know, options for it being turned into a movie. You know, it's very like Murderbot, you know, like Rusted Robots. It's like, oh, this is the new phenomenon that's sweeping across. So, but she's got like hundreds of thousands of followers before the book even comes out. She's recognized in the street, everything. But it's this like fantasy. It's like a fantasy of what it would be like if you like. It's like the outside of the publishing industry fantasy of what it must be like to be the most successful hit author.
Yeah.
Who gets the book that's so big that you get recognized on the street and your book wins the Nebula Award and the Hugo Award and people are listing you among the greats of science fiction and you get the Goodreads People's Choice Award for this and it gets optioned for movies. Yeah. Things.
It's a bit like the TV show Castle, where it's like a fictitious.
Yeah, yeah.
This is how what we think a successful author okay. of.
No, carry on. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Whatever fiction is, what his life could be like or
but
must be like.
But here's the thing. We know that in the TV show Castle, the author is just writes trashy detective
books.
That people like. That he writes trashy books. And then in the real world, Castle, what's his name?
Richard Castle.
Oh, Frank Castle's the Punisher, isn't it? So Richard Castle is the... so they actually published books under the name Richard Castle, didn't they? But the whole point is those Nicky Heat novels are just trashy police detective novels in the same way that the TV show is just... Everyone just, oh, it's just trashy New York police detective TV. Show.
But surprisingly many people like this stuff.
Unfortunately, in this novel, we are told that the novel within the novel, The Rusted Robots, which is the novel within novel, is the greatest science fiction book and the most popular science fiction book that comes out.
Right.
Unfortunately, we then read some of that novel, excerpts from the novel within the novel or in this novel, and they're fine. They're not, I mean, they're better than the literary fiction stuff that literary fiction mixed with near future science fiction stuff that Nnedi Okorafor is doing. But the Rusted Robot, it's not great. And like you say, it's like, oh, it's a bit Wall-y. It's a bit Einstein Intersection. Oh, and it's very important that it's Einstein Intersection, because Einstein Intersection, which is written by Delaney, is about people as humans have left the Earth, but they kind of left behind their society and civilization, but all the humans are empty. So an alien race comes in and lives within the humans.
Oh yeah.
But what their job is, or what their quest is in life, is to find the stories and myths that humanity told about them, told to each other and told among themselves, and then either recreate them, relive them, or that is their job, or that's what their purpose in life
is. Such a funny idea.
So it's a story. So it's a story about, like, it's an author. Delaney wrote this as an author, and the most important thing in this future, this distant future, post-apocalyptic, humans have left Earth and it's now only inhabited by these others. The most important thing there is storytelling, which is very handy if you're an author and you want to tell your own mythic storytelling and you want to play around with myth.
Yeah.
And so that's this book is the same kind of thing. It's more Wall-E, like robots left around. But some of the robots, the Humes in the book, which are the human form robots.
Mm-hmm. That's now the robot.
The rusted robots.
Rusted robots.
The rusted robots in the novel. Rusted robots in the novel. Death of the Author.
Right.
Their job, or what they find most important, is to go round and find the stories that humans told each other, because robots aren't creative enough to come up with their own stories. So their job is to go around and find as many other stories mm-hmm. as possible. And I'm like, oh, this is just Wall-E crossed with Einstein intersection. Me, like, picking out these influences from before. I don't think maybe Nnedi Okorafor has read the Einstein intersection, but it's a bit like me going, you know, reading the Ministry of Time mm-hmm. and going, oh, this is just Fire in the Abyss by that Stuart Gordon that I read, you know, before, and I've reviewed, and I look on Goodreads, and I'm the only person who's ever read. I think there's one other review on the whole of Goodreads who ever read a book about an Arctic, a British Arctic adventurer who was transported in time to the real world. And I'm like, it's the same. How can so? In the same way, I'm reading this, like these excerpts from Rusted Robots. I'm like, oh, so just like the Einstein intersection crossed with Wall-E. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's just me bringing that baggage along.
Yeah.
But the Einstein intersection I found was so fascinating that I read it. I finished listening to the audiobook. I immediately went back to the beginning of the audiobook and listened to the whole thing a second time because I was fascinated by what it's like to read a story where at the start I didn't know that was for. I didn't mm-hmm. know that. I'm like, who's Lolobi? And there's three genders, but that's not explained. And you kind of just get to know this world. Whereas in Rusted Robots, we are told, I am a robot. The most important thing to me is to discover I discover stories that are written by the humanity that has now left Earth. And my job is to... And I'm like, there was a whole novel written about this by Delaney. But Delaney knows what he's doing because he's like a 1 million times better writer than Nnedi Okorafor is. Like... When I'm saying like what the job of the writing is, it's like what the job of storytelling is. So Nnedi Okorafor has it like four ways. She is an author writing about being an author. She's inserted herself into this thing to write a fantasy about what it would be like to be a wildly successful author rather than just a middling successful author. She's, you know, on a storytelling level. And then within the story is a story about the world where the most important thing in the world to these robots is storytelling.
Right.
And I'm thinking at the end of this novel, the most important thing that's going to save the world isn't going to, like, because in the Rusted Robots, there's some aliens who visited the sun, have been infected, and they're coming back and they're going to destroy the world or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I know that the thing that's going to save them in the end is some stories, storytelling.
Well, of course, that's the story of the book.
And this is what happens in stories which are told in the medium where they are, that the thing that they are is the most important thing. This happens all the times in movies. The movies that win the Oscars are the ones that say, hey, you know what's the most important thing in the world? Movie making. You know where the most important thing in the world is? Los Angeles. La La Land, you win. Argo, it's about a movie production which saves hostages and over here. And what about this? And what about... And I'm like, yeah, like... Of course the movies that are about how important the movies are going to be are the ones that are going to be the most successful. And I'm like, and this is a story about how a story in the Rusted Robots is going to, like, projecting that story out into the world is going to convince the rogue robots that are going to come back and destroy. It's going to be, and I didn't read the end of the book. And then I'm thinking, what is the story that's going to be there? And then my mind is going, it's going to be this story. The story that I'm reading now is going to be the story that they're going to send out. And I don't know. I didn't get to the end of the book. Again, I stopped reading before halfway through. But then I read some of the reviews and I'm like, oh yeah, she does go into space at the end and the story is, and it probably is going to be the thing that saves the day in the Rusted Robots, is going to be the stories. I'm like, so what she's done is constructed this pyramid or well or tower or other way round, whatever, layers and layers of what's the best thing in the world? Being an author. What's the best thing in the world? Storytelling. What's going to save the world? Storytelling. What's going to be the best thing? Storytelling. You know, it's like this being a storytelling and an author at every level. And then also within the litfic stuff, it's sort of like, what's the best thing in the world to be? An author. What's the best thing to do is being an author with a book deal and a movie deal and a TV deal and, you know, tie-in, Happy Meals. I'm the most famous person. So it's this layering of like, okay, what is fantasy? What is science fiction? What is literary fiction? What is near future science fiction? What is distant post-apocalyptic robots in a mythic world science fiction? And then also, what is, like, in terms of fantasies, but, like, then what is myth? What is myth-making for yourself personally? And then what is a fairy tale? Because this is what it is. It's about the princess. She's literally a princess. Or she's, like, you know, some Nigerian prince who married someone, and then her mother's like, we're royalty. And they're like, no, we're not. We're, like, you know, doctors and lawyers who've moved from Nigeria. Now we're, that's what we do now, because the immigrants go to Chicago. And so, like, but we're royalty. So it's literally a princess who is, you know, paralyzed when she was a child, but then she's given new legs. And I'm like, and at the end of the book, she's gonna die, and she's gonna replace herself part by part. She's talking about, she's got this AI assistant, and I'm like, so the AI is gonna be her and her brain, and she's gonna write the next book, and her legs, and she's gonna be completely replaced by prosthesis. She's gonna do a reverse Millennium Man, or whatever. No, Bicentennial Man. Millennium Man is different. Bicentennial Man, where's a robot who replaces himself bit by bit to become human. I'm like, oh, and Nnedi Okorafor is going to replace enough of herself that she can still walk when she's dead and still write when she's dead, and she's going to die, and the death of the author is actually, in the end, it's not going to be figurative, it's actually going to be literal. Yeah. She's literally going to die, but now she is going to be the first cyborgy robot thing, which is then going to establish herself, and she's prophesied that when humanity dies, robots are going to take over, and she herself is this character far enough in the future that in the future she's going to be the robot which is so enthralled with storytelling that she's going to find the story of her. Anyway, all of this stuff's going on in my head, and I'm like, this is the cleverest book that I've read. Like, the ideas, the fundamental ideas in Death of the Author are, like, super interesting for me to think about, but only if I don't have to read the novel myself.
Okay.
Like, I want to read this novel with all these ideas in it, which, again, I can get a bit from The Einstein Intersection. I can get a bit from, you know, Slaughterhouse-Five. I can get a bit from other great books. But Nnedi Okorafor is like, how about all of these are one book and this is my statement? But then I've just got to spend time with this character who is so obnoxious and unlikable, written by Nnedi Okorafor, who isn't a good enough writer to pull all these ideas together. So it's, again, it's a bit like, you know, it's a bit like Ministry of the Future, where, no, Ministry of Time. Ministry of the Future, Kim Stanley Robinson. It's a bit like Minish, where I'm like, oh, I really appreciate what you're doing, which is, you're like this literary, fictional, science fictional, experimental kind of stuff. I'm into it, but that was a failure. But in terms of writing, I got to the end and it was fine. 3 stars. Here I'm like, I'm so excited about what this, the possibilities that are being hinted at in this book, where I can be like, oh, this could be the best of Slaughterhouse-Five and Einstein Intersection and other books. And it's interesting because it's like Nigerian and, like, you know, all this other kind of stuff, which I like, you know, Tade Thompson stuff in Lagos. And I'm like, yeah, I like the African futurism or Afrofuturism, whichever one is the right term. I'm not entirely sure. Yeah. Whatever's going on here, I like all of this, but it's written so badly. Like, I couldn't get through the writing. I had this as a loan from the library, because I added it to my, hey, I want to read this in my library, you know, ages ago.
Yeah.
And it came up a few months ago.
And
I was
the waiting
like,
list
whatever.
Is long.
It's a waiting list. Last time it came up, I was like, I'm reading something else. I don't have time. And then it came back up. I've got 2 weeks to listen to it. And when, after 1 week of trying to get through this book, I was only 35% of the way through. And I'm like, I'm not going to make it to the end just time-based, because it's just such a slog. So then I did listen to the Meal of Thorns episode about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can really tell when Jake, what's his name? Jake Cascella Brookins? I forgot his name in previous episodes.
Yeah.
But I always find it funny when he obviously doesn't like a book. Then he's sort of like, yeah, I'm not quite sure what to think about that. I was like, you do know what to think. You think it's really shit, but you will need to be diplomatic about this, because you can't just say this book was complete garbage, but it raised interesting questions. And the other person is saying, this book made me think about lots of things. And I'm like, yes, this is a book that made me, Luke, think about lots of things. Great discussion. They're the ones who told me that at the end of the book, we don't even get to the death of the author, even though at the start of the book, we get these passages written from the point of view of people who knew the author in the book.
Yeah.
Like the character in the book. And they're like, oh yeah, she was like this. She's being talked about in the past tense. And I was like, oh, so she's definitely going to die. And they mentioned in this podcast, yeah, we get to the end of the book and she goes into space, but she doesn't die. And we're not quite sure what happens to her. And I'm like, I'm so pleased I didn't get to the end of this book that we did. So again, it's left unclear that I think she gets turned into a space robot.
Yeah.
But it's set up that she's going to die. But I think space robot rather than physical death.
Right. Yes. like it's the question of when, how many parts of a car do you have to replace?
Yeah, yeah.
For
Ship
it to
Theseus,
still be,
is
yeah,
it? Yeah, yeah.
For it to still be the original car. And this is the same.
It turns out it's what number is engraved onto the chassis or whatever. No, not the chassis, the frame or whatever. It's actually frame numbers. Yeah.
So how many parts of the human do you need to replace for it to still be the
like
original
I say,
human?
It's exactly bicentennial men, but in the other direction. Yes. Like, and it's been done in science fiction so many times. That like we look totally like robots now. You know, it's been done loads of times.
Yes.
Either way, I thought literary fiction from someone who literally turns themselves into a robot in the future and is writing a story about robots in the future where storytelling and stories are the most important to them, and this is an author in the book doing this, you know, and I'm like, this is great, this is going to be the greatest book, and I'm like, I didn't manage to get 40% of the way in, and then I gave up. But I definitely wanted to have this conversation because for a one star book it's like a 5-star book in the head of me, and I think that's why it's super popular on Goodreads, is because people are reading it.
People are doing the work.
People are doing all the work, and they're like, oh, this has got so many questions about this. And I think what I've done now is I've expressed what's interesting about the book and great about the book and why it's a success. Yeah. But also it feels to me quite cynical how much the author is like, oh, I'm just going to do the literary fiction. Like Nnedi Okorafor, I looked at a Wikipedia page. I didn't know these facts about her, but reading this book, I knew that it's like, oh, Kellyanne Bradley, who is half Vietnamese. No, not Vietnamese, Khmer, Cambodian, half Cambodian. Oh, yeah, man, I got completely mixed up.
I heard that and I thought, I just let it pass.
No, I'll get there in the end. I can remember. Yeah, there's me being racist as well. No, just messing up what the... where the background
origin
was.
Is
the origin is as well. So here's the thing. So the author in this book, paraplegic, in the wheelchair all the time. At the age of 19... This is Nnedi Okorafor in real life. She underwent spinal fusion surgery to straighten and fuse her spine. A rare complication led to Okorafor becoming paralyzed from the waist down.
Right.
So, again, write what you know, all that kind of stuff. But it's like, I wouldn't say cynical, but it's so brazen. Let me put it that way. It's so brazen to put yourself in a novel so much in this way that you write the fantasy about what it would be like to be the world's most successful new science fiction author and to get movies and TV shows and, you know, merchandising deals and become one of the most famous people. And it says here as well, she grew up in Chicago, same as in the novel. She got a master's degree. Oh, she served as an associate professor at Chicago State University, same as the book opens with our main character being fired from that very job. And I'm like, oh, right. So this is like a fantasy of what it would be like to be an author who didn't have to actually put in the work, who could just do all of this and then skip straight to the super famous area. She doesn't, in the novel, never sees any other authors. She has this agent who does a good job for her, but never really, you never see all of that. It's sort of like, wouldn't it be great to be a science fiction author or an author at all, who never had to worry about any promotion, everything was just taken care of. So the whole thing is like this wish fulfillment fantasy.
Yeah.
But like really explicitly and brazenly is that.
Yeah.
But also mixing in the literary fiction of like, what would it be like to go back and visit the homeland and go back to Nigeria and see the novel that she said she'd written, like in the novel, like the previous novel in the novel by our author, written by the author, is a literary fiction novel which wasn't worth, because there was nothing there except it being a literary fiction stuff.
Yeah.
Like, wow, we need to spice that up a bit. And that's what they've done here. That's what Nnedi Okorafor has done. It's sort of like, what if I write about what it feels like to be a paraplegic author from Chicago who's an associate professor who writes science fiction stuff, what would it be like to be that? But just that wouldn't be enough. So I've got to spice, you know, it's like,
up.
It's all spiced. Everything is taken up to a level. Like there is nothing in this book, but it still has a little bit too much, like the whole thing felt like it had a little bit too much American postmodern cynicism in there. Mm. Which is unfortunate, because I like this style of writing. I think I would like it if it was a little bit less cynical in this way
and more sincere.
And Kellyanne Bradley with the Ministry of Time, there wasn't any cynicism in there, if you know what I mean. And I think that's more of a British thing. I mean, British, you can have British sarcasm and British irony but that's different from American emotional detached cynicism, postmodern cynicism.
Yeah, I understand.
So that's another little thing which
I guess that also is what the main character in the book is like. Literally, when you are describing, oh, she went there, she had sex, and then went on and
yeah, yeah, that sort is of like, very much. I had sex, but I didn't feel any emotions. Oh, but I did feel some emotions about this, but not too much. Yeah. Oh, I got to, you know, like that kind of emotion, like that kind of American cynical postmodern emotional policing to be like, oh, you can feel something, but not too much. You can feel joy. Don't feel too much joy. Like, again, we started watching the Barbie movie yesterday. And like, and all of that was like, yay. No, not that peak emotion. You're not allowed to have that peak emotion. Yeah. Whereas in the other one, which is the Lego movie, which is like a similar kind of thing. It's all like emotion bricks. And everyone's like, yes, all the emotions turned all the way up, you know?
Yeah. And it's not like the thing, the movie or the book is saying you're not allowed to have the emotion. You are. As a reader or experiencer of the thing, you have the emotion, but then the book and the movie is doing something that then immediately puts this like, oh, okay, I am having this emotion.
Yeah.
But also now the author, the writers, the whatever, they are now taking it in a direction that I'm thinking now, I want to have this emotion more.
Yeah.
And they are taking this away from me.
Yeah. It's just that undercutting at every the undercutting of emotions and not letting me feel
or like this, which ha ha, you now had this emotion, right?
Oh, it's like ha, I made you feel something, I made you think something, I made you have this reaction. Yeah, it's all like that. But a bit too much like that.
Yes. But we all want to be too happy, don't do we?
Yeah. It's like again in the Barbie movie.
Are you sad now?
I stopped watching after Ken was like, men rule the world. And that was over, like his reaction of being really happy that men rule the world in the real world rather than the Barbie world was undercut by being literally talking over him. Like they literally had two people saying what they were happy about. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, oh, no, that's enough. You're not allowed to actually genuinely express that. But then I think the real issue was that the actors were also doing that with their acting at the same time, as on a meta level. Anyway, let's wrap it up there because this book is getting 1 stars because I...
Oh.
What? I didn't finish it. It was so badly written. The characters were so... like, it doesn't matter. It's like saying, oh, I invented that. It's like, did you invent that? Or did you have an idea in your head and you told someone about it? It's like, oh, yeah, I had an idea in my head and I told somebody about it. The hard part of inventing is making the thing that works. Mm. The hard part of writing a novel, which is about myth and storytelling and literary fiction and near future science fiction and doing this genre mashup. Anyone can just do a mashup by taking two songs and playing it at the same time. Mm-hmm. The great mashups are making that into a new piece of music and inventing a new genre of music. That's the hard part. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, hey, guys, check this out. It's going to be whatever, like
the
Black Album and the White Album. Yeah, I knew what you were going to say about this. It's going to be the Black Album and the White Album. We're going to put them together and we're going to call it the Grey Album. And it's by Danger Mouse, who then, or whatever, whoever it was, who then went on to produce massive hits and become a billion dollar producer or whatever. Mm. It's all like, oh yeah, the hard part isn't just having the idea of let's mix the Black Album with the White Album. It's like, no, it's doing the work. It's doing the work. You've got to actually do the work.
Mm-hmm.
So the work failed in a way which the idea is there. But and then I think this is this, all of these Goodreads, People's Choice, best winner of science or best science fiction or favorite science fiction novel of the year. I think just presenting the ideas is good enough. Hey, how about a time travel book mixed with workplace comedy, mixed with romance, and you know, Man Out of Time,
then,
kind of like that.
And then people already have things
bring,
in their head.
You can bring along all those things. Yeah. And in the case of Ministry of Time, I think, mostly fine. Like, well-written, but kind of fell apart at the end.
Yeah.
Whereas this, if you just can't even get through it, you're like, yeah, anyone can say they're inventing a new genre or mixing genres in ways before or experimenting in this way.
Mm.
But you've actually got to pull it off. And for me... wasn't pulled off.
Okay.
Didn't get there for me.
Okay.
1 star, but made me think about many much better novels and much better stories.
As we just heard.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah,
as we just heard. All right, the next, we were going to, you said, hey, we can talk about two books if it's a short episode. Sorry.
That was not a short episode.
Not quite a short
episode.
You had
so much to say and you were quite excited about the things you said.
Yeah.
And
We might get to those other books. Otherwise, I'm glad that I talked about a book that I didn't finish. I wasn't sure if I should talk about a book that I didn't finish or that I didn't even get halfway through. But I think it's valid because it feels not important. It feels like up to date for me to be talking about this new movement in science fiction at the time when we're like, oh, I'm really bored of wizards versus lesbians and what do you call it, lesbian space atrocities or whatever these kind of things are, which is like, oh, we have this and then we put somebody else in somebody else's head. That happens in this as well, like the Rusted Robots is all like, hey, and you're going to be a character and then we're going to put this other character in your head, so two characters are going to live in your head. And I'm like, oh, so we're just doing Nine Fox Gambit and what is it, the Arkady Martin, A Memory Called Empire. Yeah. We're also going to play with that but with robots. So it's going to be Murderbot, but with someone else. Yeah, okay. Either way, so this book made me think of many other better books.
And because it's very current, like this is
that's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Just as we're getting to the end of the cycle of, I think, Torwave, Squeakcore, things being in people's heads, it being about, you know, gender and identity and trans
identity. Which are still really great topics.
Still great topics. But again, I think in genre cycles, once you get 10, 15 years into that, you're like, all right, so what's the new thing? And I'm kind of excited to see, I want to see this literary science fiction with science, litfic, plus science fiction combined. I don't have a word for it, but whatever these authors are doing, they are very self-consciously doing it. And I think I want some good science fiction authors who are very good at writing to try it, because we could have another Slaughterhouse-5 here. Like it's playing in the same space, but like with near future science fiction rather than pulpy people from the other space and have sex with space green space aliens, which is what they're trying to do, that's happening in Slaughterhouse-5, if you know what I mean. Kilgore Trout isn't saying, oh, I'm the best science fiction author. It's like, no, it's stupid space alien space adventure stuff. Whereas this, I want to see someone who's good enough at both the science fiction part and the literary part. I mean, this would be made for Ian M. Banks. He literally wrote under two names, one to do the literary fiction and one to do the science fiction. I'm like, this could have been it.
Which
actually brings me on to the other book that I wanted to talk about.
Oh, we are doing it.
No, I say it would be the other book that I wanted to talk about.
Right, I thought we were wrapping this up.
Yes, and I am wrapping up. Inversions by Ian M. Banks is that.
Yes.
He was doing what this book was trying, like he was doing it there, but he's too clever. That book's too clever.
To me, I know this is a really good book and I've read it. We talked about this before. It feels like there can't be possibly any more things you have to talk about this book.
I want to talk about, we'll get to it
anyway,
at some point.
You were just saying you don't have a word for this, whatever new genre is. And I was sitting here and immediately my brain went like bloop and what? There's a new word.
What's that?
Sick lit fic.
Sit, sick lit fic. Cyclic fit. Sick lick fit. I can't even say it. You said it
what?
To me.
Sick lit fic.
Yeah, but the T in the middle gets in the way. The lit.
No.
The,
you just need to say it properly. Sick lit fit.
Sick lit fit. No, you can't start lit it off with fic. Sick because science isn't there.
Yeah,
it's sci lit fic.
It's
lit sci fic. It's lit sci. Whatever it is, we don't need to give it a name.
I just like, that just came into my head and it felt really
Tall
funny.
Wave Squeakcore is something that we say on this podcast for me to say that and then you know what I'm talking about when I say that.
Sick lit fic.
Sit lit fic. Either way, I'm excited. I'm excited about science fiction. Everyone's moaning about like, oh, death of science fiction and genre and criticism and stuff.
Science fiction as horror, thriller, crime stuff
is
malleable enough and flexible enough to keep going. I mean, it is literally in the name of science fiction. Science fiction is something that it's endless.
Yeah.
There is always...
Well, as soon as there's anything else happening in science, we can start talking about it in fiction.
Yeah.
And that is what's happening here. But again, at the moment, the science fiction-y parts, the sci-fi parts, are like tropes that are sprinkled on.
Yeah.
And I would like it to be the tropes that are sprinkled on aren't just tropes that are sprinkled on. But again, that's not bad, because again, I think Slaughterhouse-Five, it is just tropes sprinkled on and unreliable. it's tropes sprinkled on in the head of an unreliable narrator, yep. which is great. Like, I'm totally into that. 5 stars.
Yeah.
But that is not what this book does. I want the tropes to be more than just lightly sprinkled in terms of Sea of Tranquility and what was the next book I was going to say? Oh, yeah, like the Ministry of Time and now Death of the Author. Like, what's going on here? Come on, guys. Let's get some science, like rigorous science fiction authoring going on as well.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. Follow me on Instagram, Goodreads, Blue Sky, Mastodon.
Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Thanks to all our Patreon supporters. I know there's some Science Fiction Book Review podcast listeners on Patreon.
Thanks a lot for that.
Yeah, that'll be it. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.